The hour, the dark, and the sex settled in. So Hicks did too, relaxing and feeling sleep coming when Greta asked, "You talk to your kids?" Shaw called the night after football practice, heard what happened, checking in. He handed the phone off to his sisters. "So yeah, they're worried about their dad, but think they're all old enough to get this as part of the job. At least that's what they gave me. I'll know better when I got him back."
Good.
Hicks hadn't shared with Greta about Hope's visit that day. Since Reva had been there when Hope showed, Greta might already know if that news had hit the salon and she just wasn't mentioning it. Or she could not know and he wasn't going to bring his ex into her bed. What he was going to do was carve out some time where his mind was not centered on a murder and consider what was happening with Greta. He had friends. He had female friends. He'd never had a friend with benefits. He was thinking that might be nice, but it still wasn't what this was. No, he was thinking that wasn't what he wanted this to be. It was too soon, but he was also beginning to think he didn't give a shit. She was great, and it might not be the best timing, but he'd be a fool if something that gave every indication it was just that awesome walked into his life, and he didn't work with her to discover where it might go. That conversation would have to happen after he found a murderer. But it was going to happen. So as Hicks fell asleep, feeling Greta's warm weight pressed to his side, along his stomach, smelling her, he found he had another reason to catch a killer. And fast. Chapter 12. Really fucking simple. Hickson. The next morning, Hicks woke up again before 6, alone in Greta's bed. He hauled himself out and went to her bathroom, flipping on the light switch and seeing poking out of her pail, with its bouquet of rolled washcloths, a toothbrush in its packaging with a blue bow stuck to it that was 5 times the size of what it was stuck to. He grinned, did his thing, including brushing his teeth with a new toothbrush, went back out and got dressed but carried his boots with his socks stuffed into them down the stairs, dumping them at the foot and smelling sausage as he rounded the steps to head to the kitchen. She was standing at the sink in her robe, body facing her windows that now had the sheer shades drawn up, a coffee cup held aloft in front of her, but her head was turned, eyes to him. "Thanks for the present," he said, strolling into the room.
"You'll learn I'm bountiful with my generosity," she joked.
He stopped close to her side, dug his fingers in her hair, and held her in position as he bent and took her mouth in a morning kiss that shared far more gratitude than any toothbrush was worth. When he broke the kiss and lifted slightly away, he watched her slowly open her eyes and breathe.
"Today, I am totally buying you dental floss."
He started chuckling, doing it dipping in to touch his mouth to hers before he let her go and went to the coffee. She went to the stove to turn sausage links. Once he made his mug, saw hers was still mostly full. He rested the side of a hip against the counter, turned to her. "I catch this guy, I'm taking you to dinner." Slowly, she pivoted to face him.
"Dinner?"
she asked. With the look on her face, Hicks knew she got him. "Dinner," he confirmed.
"Hickson."
"Not now," he whispered. "Not now, baby. I need this, what you're giving me. Need it to be easy. Need it to be uncomplicated."
"Okay,"
she said softly. He said what he said, but he still held her gaze and made sure she understood him. "At dinner, you're up for it. We'll complicate things." Something lit in her eyes, her face, making her early morning makeup-less beauty awe-inspiring. Hope, maybe. Excitement, absolutely.
"I'm up for it,"
she told him. He smiled at her. She smiled back, and there was the hope. Christ. Yeah, awe-inspiring. "Since that's gonna happen, sweetheart, feel at this juncture it's not taking it too far to ask your last name," he remarked. She stared at him, before she busted out laughing. He was smiling at her because he liked her laughter, and it was funny they were where they were and he didn't know her last name. But he was just glad she also found it amusing when she quit laughing and shared,
"Dare. It's Dare."
Greta Dare. He liked it.
"Bonus, my middle name is Kate," she went on. "Not Catherine, just Kate. Apparently, my mother wasn't into too many syllables."
"It's pretty," he murmured.
"Thanks,"
she whispered. "Timothy," he told her.
"Sorry?"
she asked. "Your bonus." She grinned. Then her eyes went strange, and her body started visibly shaking.
"Oh my God."
Her voice was shaking too.
"You're Sheriff Hickson T. Drake. You totally need to start going by that handle on your CB.
He liked the fact she shared his and his son's sense of humor, not to mention got in on a joke she didn't even know was their joke.
"This has been suggested by my son," he noted. She gave him a blinding smile.
"Well, that's two votes."
He shook his head. "Not gonna happen."
"Shame,"
she muttered, still smiling and turning back to the stove.
"You need help?"
he asked.
"Nope,"
she told the sausage.
"Just need you to pull over the stools and sit your behind on one. You probably won't be relaxing for a while. You do it over breakfast to get your belly full, you'll be able to face the day."
He stared at her back as she moved from the sausage to the counter by the stove, grabbed the handle of a spoon in a big bowl, and started beating what sounded like batter. Then he moved to her, right to her, right into her space, fitting himself to her back and putting his hands to the edges of the counter on either side of her. It was batter. Pancakes. Like she'd promised. He dipped his head and set his lips to the skin at the side of her neck. "Night before last, you told me you liked me. And I didn't share you got the same. But I'll share more. It's about pancakes. It's about the way you sing. It's about how amazingly beautiful you are. So beautiful sometimes if I don't brace myself, it blinds me. It's about you knowing I really need another bourbon and getting me one when I'm trying to do the right thing. It's about you knowing better what the right thing needs to be. It's about how hot it is when you fuck yourself on my cock. And it's about how gorgeous you look when you come. It's about stud muffins and gumdrops. It's about a lot of things, Greta."
"That all sounds really complicated, Hicks,"
she replied softly, her voice breathy. "No, sweetheart. All that is really fucking simple." On that, before it did get complicated, he kissed her neck, moved away, and got the stools. He was ass to stool, sipping coffee, and she was pouring batter on a heated griddle when she commented,
"I noted you chose stud muffin and not snugglebug."
Hicks started chuckling. She turned to him with happiness, playfulness, and a little heat in her eyes.
"I'll admit I prefer that one too."
He busted out laughing. Greta grinned as she set aside the batter. She didn't feed him pancakes. She fed him big, fluffy buttermilk pancakes with sausage links and warmed syrup. She ate beside him. She was only halfway done when he'd finished, rinsed his plate, and got himself a syrupy sweet kiss.
"Meet you on the porch?"
she asked after he'd pulled away. "Definitely.
I've got to sing at the Dew tonight. Snugglebug,"
she reminded him. "I'll see you there too." Her eyes gave him a smile. He moved away, but brushed his finger along the smile at her lips. Then he moved out of the kitchen, sat on a step to pull on his socks and boots, and called out,
"Later, Gumdrop," on the way to the door.
"Later, Stud Muffin,"
she returned. He shot a grin over his shoulder at her as he walked out her door. Mid-morning, Hicks, with his ass leaned against the edge of the desk, his ankles crossed in front of him, Larry standing to his left, Donna and Betts to his right, Hal farther away, but close to the whiteboard, stared at that damned board. All their eyes were to it. Larry had called Faith yesterday with the news they'd found the crime scene, and he'd given her a call that morning just to check in. They'd sifted through a variety of messages Reva and Ida had taken from folks calling in after seeing the website. None of them having anything to do with what happened on 56. None of them pertinent. So they'd also moved on. They got their report that the slug and the shell casings were from the gun that killed Calloway. They also got their report that there were trace amounts of blood the rain hadn't soaked away in the soil forensics took from the crime scene, and that blood was Calloway's. So they had more. They still had Dick. The slugs were not in the system. None of the team's legwork the day before got them much of anything. They didn't have hardly any homeless problem in McCook, so any homeless anyone noted were known. Not drifters. Not the kind to shoot a man down while stealing his truck. Not even the kind to be out on the road, and definitely not being in the position to own a gun. Regardless, his department couldn't be seen rousting homeless and harassing them without reason. Say a witness who saw them wandering 56 at any time, especially the day of the murder. They didn't have that. No one had seen any drifters. There were a number of fugitives to look into, and Donna and Betts were on that. But unless they could nab them, there was nothing they could move on. And they couldn't deem them a person of interest unless they'd been spotted at least in the county. But better, around the place of the murder or dump location at the time of either. Other than that, his crew had come up with zilch. "I need to pay a visit to our meth man," he said into the quiet room. "He doesn't deal here, but he probably knows who uses and may feel compelled to keep our relationship copacetic by helping out." Donna looked to him.
"A snake eats a rat. He doesn't rat on a rat."
He lifted his brows to her. "Got another idea?"
"Pissed to say I don't,"
she muttered. The phones rang throughout the department, but Reva was catching calls, so the team just turned their attention back to the board. The ringing stopped. Seconds later, Hicks's line rang. He reached across, picked up, and put the handset to his ear, his eyes to the lights on the phone telling him he was getting a transfer from Reva.
"Yeah?" he answered.
"Call for you, Hickson, and you'll want to take it,"
she said with urgency. He unhooked his ankles and straightened, turning toward the phone.
"Send it through,"
he heard a click and said.
"This is Sheriff Drake?"
"Drake.
Miller.
Ranger at Fort Robinson,"
a man replied. "We think we got your truck."
Hickson lifted a hand and cut his gaze through the room, snapping his fingers. He hit a button with his other hand and put down the handset.
"You're on speaker, Ranger. Got my deputies with me."
"Right.
Found a Ford F-150 this morning. Like you asked, we did a number of patrols, so it wasn't there yesterday. Found it on a patrol this morning. Seems dumped. No one around, engine cold, so whoever had it's been gone a while. Your plates, but even if they'd switched them out, won't matter. That cab is filled with blood."
Hal prowled out, yanking out his cell.
"It'll take a while, but we're coming with lights on, Miller,"
Hicks told him.
"You call your locals? Figured you'd want the news first, but they're my next call."
"Great, thanks.
It'll be a trek to get up to Dawes, but we're on our way. You got my cell in case you need to call?"
Hicks asked.
"Got it. See you when you get here."
They disconnected while Hal walked back in.
"Forensics is on their way there,"
he announced.
"Good, Hal, thanks,"
Hicks muttered, then looked to Larry. "You're with me." He turned his attention to Donna and made sure she read his look that she wasn't going to like what he had to say for a variety of reasons, but she was going to have to do it.
"I'm on the road. We still gotta talk to our meth man. You're gonna do that with Hal."
Her eyes shared she didn't like it, but she just said,
"Got it, Hicks."
Hicks looked to Betts.
"Betts, want you going over any calls Reva takes. Do it while running names of known fugitives anywhere in the U.S. that have ties to McCook County."
"Needle in a haystack?"
she asked.
"Yep,"
he answered.
"Also, the McCalls don't turn in their boy for spray painting the Mortimer's barn after school today. You take a ride out there and have another chat with them."
"Bryce did it?"
she asked, eyes crinkling.
"Luella shot his dog,"
Hickson answered.
"Art I'd paint on their fucking barn be a lot more colorful those assholes shot my dog,"
Hal muttered. Bet set her crinkle to hell, muttering back,
"Totally."
Hal looked surprised she shared this with him. But Hicks didn't have time to feel relief. It seemed his comfortable chat with his deputy yesterday might bear fruit. He turned to Larry and said, "Let's roll."
"With you, boss,"
Larry replied. And they rolled. Hicks and Larry were standing next to Ranger Miller as the Cherry County forensics boys went over the truck when his cell rang. He dug it out of his pocket, saw the call was from Donna, took it, and put it to his ear.
"Yeah?"
he asked.
"Kavanaugh Becker is a dickweed,"
she answered. Kavanaugh Becker, their meth man. Hicks blew out a sigh before he asked, "What?"
"Won't talk to anyone but you,"
she told him.
"And that would be you and only you, not you and another one of your deputies there for backup."
He could strangle Blatt for leaving him this shit. "He give any indication it's worth my while to make that effort?"
"I don't know. Think he's scum, but that's not the only reason I wouldn't play poker with the man."
"Damn. This gets done. I get back, I'll take care of that. Anything else?" he asked.
"Sadly, no. There?"
One of the forensics men was heading his way, so he said, "Not yet, but I gotta go."
"Right, Hicks. Later."
"Later." He disconnected and jerked his chin up to the guy as he shoved his phone back in his pocket. "First, the good news," the man started, which meant there was bad news. "Shit. Let's have it," Hicks said. "Guy didn't have time to run a vacuum, so we got hair. We got some fibers, we got mud. Your Vic took care of his truck, so it's tidy, but not clean as a whistle. This may narrow some shit down."
"Right, good, what else?"
Hicks pressed. "Well, obviously he couldn't clean up that blood and reckon he knew it because he didn't try. Also, your Vic's cell is in there. It's stomped to shit, but it's his model. It's not much, but at least that mystery's solved." Hicks nodded.
"Now, the bad," the guy said. "Whole damn thing is wiped down. Steering wheel, dash, handles, windows, even the exterior. Hood to tailgate. Thing's been gone over with what looks like Windex. Streak free. Not even a partial fingerprint we could pick up."
"Fuck,"
Larry bit off.
"Larry,"
Hicks murmured.
"I'd say this is a fuck moment, Sheriff,"
the guy put in, sounding frustrated himself. Hicks gave him a nod and turned to Larry. "On your cell, man. Call Faith. Ask her if her husband happened to keep a bottle of window cleaner in his truck. He didn't? Get on to Betts and get her on the phone to every gas station and convenience store between Glossop and Fort Robinson to see if any of their clerks recall a man in a white Ford truck buying glass cleaner in the last 3 days." Larry nodded and stepped away. Hicks looked to the ranger. "We'll arrange for this to be towed to McCook.
You got your hands full and I got a brother-in-law with a towing business. You want me to take care of that for you?"
Miller asked.
"Be obliged."
Miller nodded and stepped away. Hicks looked to the forensics guy, whose name he now knew very well was John.
"We find this asshole, you come to the pig we're gonna roast in celebration and I'll have your favorite bottle waiting for you."
"Cherry's a big county, Sheriff, but can't say we've had anything this interesting in a while, no matter how much what we're investigating sucks. That said, never turned down a hog roast or a bottle."
"Me either."
The other forensics guy, named Jay, called.
"Hope the next call you get from us is sharing the details of when you can roll up for that and not another request for you to roll out,"
Hicks replied.
"Me too, brother,"
John muttered, turned, and headed back to the truck. Larry returned and immediately shared.
"Betts is on it."
"Right," Hicks said, staring at the truck.
"You figure his prints are in the system and that's why he was so methodical about wiping that truck down?"
Larry asked.
"I figure anyone with a TV set or who can read knows their prints in a truck owned by a man who was murdered would be methodical about wiping down the truck they transported his dead body in and then stole."
"Yeah,"
Larry mumbled.
"We're out,"
Jay said as he and John moved from the truck.
"We'll call, we got a report."
"Thanks,"
Hicks replied.
"Toast coming,"
Miller said, joining them. Hicks turned his attention to the man.
"Thanks to you too, Ranger.
Skeeves me out, knowing that trash was in my park. But still, hope this gets you a step closer in catching him,"
Miller returned. Hicks did too. Larry was with Betts, running down a lead at a convenience store in Alliance, where a man shared he'd sold a bottle of Windex to a man in an older model, white F-150. And Hicks was in his ramp, heading out to their meth man's fortress, when his cell went. He dug it out, saw the call was from his girl, and took it, answering, "Hey, honey, how you doing?"
"You have a girlfriend?"
Corinne asked in accusation. "Fuck."
"Cor, I can't believe you have a girlfriend. You broke up with Mom like a month ago."
"Not even close." "Corinne," he growled.
"She says we should prepare because you're moving on and we're gonna have to do it with you,"
Corinne declared furiously. But Hicks felt a burn hit his gut.
"Who?"
he demanded.
"What?"
his daughter snapped. "Who said that?"
"Mom, Dad, who else?"
she retorted.
"Hope." Hope probably knew his Bronco was in Greta's drive last night, and in retribution she told his daughter he was seeing Greta.
"She tell Mamie?" he asked.
"Just me and Shaw. She doesn't want Mamie upset. And anyway, Mamie's at dance, and by the way, not cool you told Shaw about it and not me."
"I didn't tell Shaw."
"Well, he knew, and he was all up in Mom's face about sharing something with your kids about their dad."
As much as that had to suck for Hope, she'd bought it. And now she'd bought the fact that Hicks was not going to do fuck all to help her rid herself of it.
"We'll talk about this next week," he told his girl.
"Will you be marrying her by then?"
she asked snidely.
"First," he bit off, "you do not talk to your father that way. Second, you need to calm down and think about this. Your mother and I have not been apart for a month. We've been apart a lot longer than that. And last, Corinne, we'll talk about this next week."
"So I'm sure you want me to keep it from Mamie like you kept it from me."
"Yeah, that'd be nice," he returned. "Seeing as I would have told you myself if there was something to tell. And I'd do it when it was the right time to tell you. I'd appreciate it if you let me at least do that with your sister if that time comes."
"Whatever, Dad."
"Again, you do not talk to me that way."
She said nothing. So he said,
"I'm ticked at you, but I love you, and now I gotta go."
"Right. Later, Dad."
He didn't understand the emphasis on Dad. But he wasn't going to ask, and it wouldn't matter. She hung up on him. Hicks drove, and did something he didn't like to do for two reasons. The new one, speaking to the woman at all, being the one he most disliked. He called Hope. She answered on the first ring.
"Fancy you phoning me,"
she said sarcastically as greeting, like that wasn't what she'd been angling for. At least one thing was clear. She was over her urge to be there for him when he needed her.
"I told you we were done."
"Yep, remember that, Hicks, vividly."
"We weren't. You're the mother of my children. I was intent on finding a way to keep a hold on that and find something good we could still share through it, but now, Hope, we're done."
There was a pause before.
"What's that mean?"
"That means you're the mother of my children, and that's all you'll ever be in a way I seriously hope you consider reclaiming your maiden name."
There was a moment of stunned silence he actually felt was stunned through the line before.
"Hickson, if you're pissed I told Shaw and Corinne..."
"Yes, I'm pissed. And the way I'm pissed means you just broke the last straw, Hope."
"Does she mean that much to you?"
she snapped.
"No, not yet, but my children do."
On that, he disconnected and threw the phone on the passenger seat. She called back four times in the 6 miles it took him to turn into the long drive that was on an immense plot of land, where he had to ignore the man hanging at the opening of the fence, a walkie-talkie, and a Sig Sauer on his belt. He drove up to the massive, sprawling ranch house that had been built last year after Becker had scraped off his last not-quite-as-massive sprawling ranch house and replaced it. When he did, his phone rang again. And since he had to pick it up and take it with him, he saw it wasn't Hope, but Shaw. So he took the call.
"Shouldn't you be getting ready for the game?"
he asked in greeting.
"Yeah, Dad, but we need to talk."
"Shaw, sorry, son, but I'm in the middle of something."
"I get that, Dad, and I gotta be quick anyway, 'cause Coach will be ticked if he sees me on the phone."
But just to say, I'll talk to Corinne after she cools down, and I want you to think about me living exclusively with you.
Shaw.
She's a bitch.
God damn it. He had to defend her. Don't say that about your mother.
Okay. Right. Sorry.
He clipped out each word.
I still want to talk about living exclusively with you.
We'll talk later, Shaw. Keep your cool, too. Look after your sisters. Have a good game tonight, and we'll talk, kid. Promise.
Okay, Dad. Be safe, yeah?
Always. They disconnected.
Hicks swung out of the Ram, rounded the hood, and walked up the steps with his eyes on the man standing at the top, also with a walkie-talkie and a gun on his belt.
Mr. Becker is waiting for you,
the guy announced when Hicks's boot hit the top step.
Mr. Becker. Like he was a genteel landowner. Priceless.
Hicks lifted his chin and the guy turned, opening a hand-carved door that had to cost thousands and guiding Hicks through it. Hicks didn't bother looking around. The wealth and opulence enjoyed by a man who destroyed lives was of no interest to him. The man in front of him who was armed was. He was led down a hall and then through a door to the left. He'd barely cleared it, and noted he'd hit a well-appointed study before Becker was moving to him. Arms out, smile wide on his face, crying out,
Hickson!
Like he was a beloved son returning home from war.
Becker?
Hicks replied, briefly taking him in. Tall, lanky, aged 58 but looking maybe 45 tops. He didn't look like a wealthy rancher rolling in it. He didn't look like a respectable meth-dealing businessman who was killing it, which was, unfortunately, what he was. He looked like an aging rock star who was past it. Faded jeans, washed-out rock concert tee, Motley Crue, salt-and-pepper hair heavy on the salt brushing his shoulders. Hicks never knew if Becker wanted to blend into the scenery of Nebraska and/or his clientele, or if he wanted it known he might live in a house that cost over $1 million, but he was true to his roots of being raised in a trailer park on the outskirts of Dansboro. His glance wasn't so brief on the woman sitting like she belonged there in a chair behind Becker's desk. If Becker looked the aging rocker, she looked the aging groupie. It didn't take intense scrutiny to see, shave a couple of decades off her, she'd be a knockout. But it was clear. She still took care of herself, and held on to as much as she could of beauty that had once been immense. It also didn't take intense scrutiny or her proximity to Becker to understand she was bad news. Her eyes were sharp on him. He turned his attention to Becker, who stood 3 feet away, pretending to be miffed Hicks had dissed him on a hug.
Congratulations in order?
He asked. Becker gave him another ridiculously large smile.
This is Tawny, my new babe.
He was a 58-year-old man describing a woman at least in her late 40s as his new babe. And again, priceless. Hicks turned only his head to her and dipped his chin.
Pleased to meet you, ma'am.
For some reason, she smiled at him like she'd just heard an in-joke that Hicks didn't understand. And she liked the idea he was on the outside.
Sheriff?
She purred. Hicks fought his lip curling.
Tawny Hickson.
Tawny?
Becker stressed, like Hicks should know who she was. And with that name, maybe she was an aging groupie. A famous one. Maybe an ex-rock video vamp.
Tawny Dare,
Becker went on. Hicks grew still.
That's why you're here.
Only you, Hicks,
Becker shared and faked looking sad.
Sorry to say, I don't know anything about this horrible story of the young ranch hand cut down in his prime leaving his family widowed. But Tawny wanted a word with you, and I figured you'd want her to have that privately.
He was a foreman, Hicks forced out.
Say what? Becker asked. Nathan Calloway. He was foreman at the ranch where he worked.
Well, that's impressive, Becker remarked,
but did it like he didn't mean his words.
And I'm here to talk about him.
He glanced through Tawny Dare, obviously her last name, her beauty so extreme years only dimmed it. They didn't fade it,
Greta's mother.
Sorry, ma'am.
Already told you, Becker started. I don't know anything about this foreman, but...
He swayed his upper body back, wrapped an arm around his middle, resting his other elbow on it, and his chin on his upraised hand.
Seeing as you're fucking Tawny's daughter, she thought she'd have a few words with you.
Yeah, Sheriff,
Tawny said, gaining Hicks's focus.
Now, I figure you know my girl is a good girl, and you going back for more, you know just how good. But thought, the way I look out for my daughter and all, you also best know she's connected here in McCook. She's got family.
She smiled a smile the opposite of what her daughter could achieve. It did nothing to the rest of her face and eyes. It was just a movement of her lips she didn't come close to meaning.
Family who looks after her. Say, someone thinks he can fuck her and then fuck her over.
So you wanted me here so you could threaten me? He said,
and her eyebrows shot up, feigning shock.
Now, I wouldn't do that. Though, won't be no reason to. You don't fuck my girl over.
Hicks looked from Greta's mother to Becker.
You don't have anything for me on Calloway, I have no reason to be here.
He gave Hicks another massive smile.
Reckon not, since Tawny said what she needed to say.
You've yanked my chain, Hicks stated.
Say again?
Becker asked. You've yanked my chain. The roguishness sweeping clean from him, Becker studied Hicks shrewdly and was wise enough to read Hicks's demeanor and keep his mouth shut. They'd had barely any contact at all. Blatt had made it that way, while Hicks was his deputy. And Hicks had inherited that when he'd become sheriff. Becker didn't really know him. Therefore, Becker didn't know not to play games with him. He'd just assumed since Hicks had no choice but to fall in line with Blatt's deal. This only because Becker never stepped over a line Hicks could use to pounce.
That Hicks was someone who'd take a few not-so-friendly jabs aimed his way, just for a meth man and his mall to enjoy some shits and grins.
Friends don't do that, Hicks educated him. Becker got all business.
Now, Drake, think on that, Becker, he ordered.
Turned to Tawny, dipped at the waist in a phony bow, and capped it by touching his forefinger to his forehead and flipping it her way.
Miss Dare, pleasure.
Then he turned on his boot and walked out of the room, out of the house and into his Ram. He'd cleared Becker's land and was driving down County Road 21 when he pulled out his cell and called Greta, eyes to the dash clock, seeing it was after 6 at night.
Hey, good timing. Just got done with my last client. Everything cool?
She said in greeting.
You gonna be home soon? He asked.
Yeah. You gonna be done early? Want me to pick something up or cook? Just to say, I have to leave for the do at around 8, but I might be able to push that.
I'll be there in half an hour.
Okay, Hicks, but is everything okay?
I'll be there. Half an hour.
It was hesitant this time when she repeated.
Okay, Hicks.
Later, Greta.
Yeah, later, darling.
Hicks hung up and drove. He didn't park in her drive. He parked at the curb. He walked to the door that she had had open by the time he hit her porch, her eyes to his Bronco at the curb before they came to him. She pushed open the storm door for him, but stepped back into the house the minute his hand went to it, her gaze never leaving him as he entered. The storm door swooshed shut on a well-oiled hinge. He didn't fuck around.
Met your mom,
he announced, and watched the blood drain from her face.
Oh yeah.
I think you can understand I can't have any ties to a criminal element, Greta, he stated the obvious. She shook her head.
Hicks, she has a record, but...
Of course she did.
You should have told me.
I didn't think that...
During our conversation at the do, after one of the times you let me fuck you, over breakfast,
your mother's the mall of the only known drug pusher in the county.
That's something I need to know. Her eyes were huge.
Hicks, I didn't...
Now I got him calling me out to his fortress... Thinking he can fuck with me, standing there smiling as your mother threatens me, I don't treat you right. She looked like she was going to move to him, saying,
Oh my God, Hicks, I'm so...
This is over.
She went solid and snapped her mouth shut. I can't do it, he continued. Shouldn't have done it. Shouldn't have started it. Shit has a way of getting complicated real quick, but Greta, babe, gotta admit, even with all Hope's bullshit, you take the cake. She unfroze her mouth enough to start.
Can we?
Nope. He shook his head. No. Your mom, she's a real gem, Greta. Pure class.
God.
She whispered, her expressive face filling with dismay. Oh, yeah. She knew. She knew all along. Fuck him. Could have saved me from that, he told her. Could have at least given me a heads up so I wasn't blindsided like that. Walked in there, no clue. Just an evening's fun for an asshole in his piece. She winced. Yeah, it went like that, he bit off.
I'm so sorry, Hicks. Let me...
I am too, Greta. But now I know so I can untangle things before they get too messy. To explain what he meant by that, Hicks was only a step in the front door. So he only had to turn and reach to the handle to open it. He looked over his shoulder at her. I'd say take care of yourself, but it was made clear to me that you got an army to do that, so I won't bother. He gave her that. Then he walked out the door.
Greta. I sat on my ass on the floor by my front door with my phone in my hand, and I called her. Well, hello, my doting daughter. Mom answered jovially. God, I hated her. Hated her. He was the best thing that's ever happened to me, I whispered. I'm sorry, baby girl. Mama can't hear you, she sing-songed. Better than Keith. Is that so? She asked happily. Yeah, I pushed out. Well, sounds like someone should have paid her mother's cable bill. Actually... Sounds to me like someone's got herself a sugar daddy. I returned. Greta, Greta, Greta. She chanted with fake disappointment. You just never listen to me. Like I told you many times before, a girl has to play all her angles. Scratch this one. Say what? Scratch this one. I repeated. She pretended to consider it, then stated, maybe I don't want to. You're dead to me. Now it's drama. Mom muttered in exaggerated exasperation. You're dead to Andy. That got me silence. I've already called, I informed her. Taking you off the visitor list. If you try to see him at Sunnydown, they're going to call the police. So you think Sheriff Drake will come after me? She scoffed. I think, after whatever you did to him today, he'd enjoy that immensely. She'd obviously chewed him up, something I already knew, but she gave that to me too, because her voice went nasty and threatening. You think you can keep me from my boy? Her boy? He'd never been her boy. I cut her off. You're dead to me. You're dead to Andy. Your reign of terror is over, Mom. Long past due. Now I hope this one lasts a while, because if he doesn't, you are fucked. I drew in breath as she snapped, Greta, goodbye, Mom. I hung up. I then blocked her calls. Hickson's words invaded my brain.
No, sweetheart. All that is really fucking simple.
Guess you were wrong, I murmured to the darkening room. And it was then, silently, I started crying.
Chapter 13 Last Straw. Hickson.
Blood's Calloway's, no surprise.
Forensics, as John told Hicks the next morning over the phone.
Fibers, carpet, already talked to Larry. Says from what he's seen of Faith Calloway's home, they're from there. Also says he'll get samples just so we can check.
Right, Hicks muttered when John paused.
Hairs, John went on. We got some that look like they're probably gnats, and seven long, light brown ones we got off the driver's and passenger's sides that Larry says could be the wife's, though he thinks she gets hers dyed, and we know these aren't. But we gotta run them. That last, Hicks. Think you know, but sucks to remind you. It takes weeks to get DNA run, even on an active investigation. sometimes months. Seeing as this is so crucial to where you're at in yours, I'll try to see what pull I can get, but everyone's tests are crucial. So my suggestion is, see if you got county money in your budget to get private tests run. It'll go a lot faster.
I'll send a deputy up to get samples, Hicks replied. It'll be Betts. You met her, Elizabeth Rowe. She'll be there sometime today.
Gotcha. Any luck with the convenience stores?
John asked.
Maybe. Got a sketch artist going to Alliance today. I'll be expediting that since the guy reports the man he saw was not only twitchy, he had long, light brown hair.
Fucking A. Hope we nail this fucker, John muttered.
Yeah, Hicks replied.
Something coming from the bullpen that set his eyes that way. And when he saw what it was, he set his jaw.
Gotta go. We'll keep you informed.
Great. Thanks, brother.
They disconnected as Lou hit the door with Betts on her heels. It was a busy day for a Saturday at McCook County Sheriff's Department, and obviously not just because he and all his deputies were putting in overtime to catch a killer.
Sorry, boss. I tried.
Betts started. It's okay, Betts, he said, eyes to Lou, but he turned them to his deputy. And since you're here, need you to find time today to go up to Cherry and pick up some samples from forensics.
On my way to Alliance yesterday with Larry, I didn't get a chance to deal with that other case, and they didn't come in, she replied.
Cherry first. She nodded, glanced at Lou, and took off. Hicks didn't even get up from his desk when he said to Lou, "This shit does not hit my office."
"You'll see,"
she said quietly.
"Lou, seriously, I don't think it's lost on you."
"You'll see, last night you made the biggest fucking mistake of your goddamned life."
Hicks shut his mouth. She turned to leave, and Hicks started pulling in a big breath to alleviate his frustration. But he stopped in the middle of it when she turned back. He didn't like the look on her face. It was worse than the pissed-off disappointment she'd been wearing before. So he braced.
"Here you're looking for a house,"
she noted. He didn't respond.
"Probably gotta use that inheritance your uncle gave you."
Hicks grew alert. That was the second time someone had mentioned that. She shook her head, then finally lost the control she'd been holding, if only by a thread.
"Poor, stupid, stupid Hope,"
she spat. And with that, she stormed out. He didn't watch her go. He picked up his cell, went to recent calls, touched the name he needed, and put the phone to his ear. Greta's answer was hesitant.
"Hey.
Our shit is done. It doesn't come to my office. It doesn't exist in my life at all. Next person you run your mouth to, Greta, you let them know that."
"Lou,"
she muttered.
"Yeah," he bit out.
"Listen, Hicks, I didn't know she was..."
"I said what I had to say." There was silence, and then...
"Yeah, you're good at that."
He shouldn't ask. He didn't even want to freaking know. He still asked. "What's that remark mean?"
"It means you're good at talking, and you're not real good at listening. I've never been interrupted so much in my whole damned life. But it's not even that. It's just all about you. You think you escaped narrowly. I'm cluing into the fact that maybe the one who escaped was me."
"Then we're both good with where this is at," he clipped.
"Yeah, we are. Goodbye, Sheriff."
He was going to share his farewell, but he had dead air. Hicks tossed his phone down, got up, and walked out of his office, calling to Donna, who was strangely standing and talking to Hal like she didn't hate his guts. She turned her head his way.
"Yeah, Hicks."
"You got a second? I want to see you in my office." She nodded.
"Give me a minute."
He jerked up his chin and walked back to his office. He went to his phone, snatched it up, and called Larry.
"Yo, boss,"
Larry answered.
"You on your way to pick up the artist?" Hicks asked.
"Yep."
"Use lights," John called. "They found long, light brown hairs that haven't been chemically treated. Betts is going up to Cherry to get samples. We're carving money out of the budget to run private DNA tests. I want that sketch, and I want it soon. You with me?"
"Hell yeah. Lights on, Hicks."
He was in the middle of what he had to say to Larry when Donna walked in, and he ended the call quickly after Larry affirmed he'd got him. Close the door, would you? He said to Donna. She closed it, turned to him and said,
I can't read your face.
This is personal, not business, he announced.
Uh-oh,
she mumbled. They had shit to do, so he wasn't going to waste any more on this than he had to. Two times people have mentioned my uncle's inheritance to me. He trailed off, seeing her go wired before she blanked it. Tell me, he bit out.
Hickson, I'm thinking maybe we should do this over beers.
You said you all kept your mouths shut.
All that went down with Hope and me, he reminded her. Something else you didn't share?
Hicks, seriously, beers,
she replied. He stood at the front of his desk and stared into her eyes. She blew out a breath, walked to him, put a hand on the back of one of the chairs in front of the desk, and said quietly,
Think you'll get, when I tell you, why we thought this all would blow over.
Tell me, he repeated.
It was about the ring.
Hicks closed his eyes and shook his head. He opened them and demanded, Say again?
The 20th anniversary ring.
Hicks felt his body turn to stone.
I think she thought you would...
Cave, he whispered. He saw it then, Hope staring at him the way she did over that damned table. The papers on it, their lawyers present. He knew it then. How she'd seemed almost paralyzed in shock after he'd lifted his head once he'd signed his name. Now he knew it. How she'd started calling an hour after they left that table, begging him to talk.
You know, Hickson. You know.
After he got that inheritance, she'd asked him to buy her that ring on their 20th anniversary, smiling, excited, showing him the photo of it in a catalog. All he'd seen was the price. And he had to admit he didn't hold back his laughter that she'd even suggest he get her something that pricey when they were on the verge of putting kids through college. He'd also admit that maybe that was not the right reaction to have. That said, she'd given him a tremulous grin once he was done laughing, so he thought she'd gotten where he was at, where he thought they both should be at, and saw the light. Obviously, she hadn't. But he never in his life would think she'd wage war over a ring. A war that would destroy their marriage. And he never in the life he'd led with her thought she was a woman who'd do such a despicably selfish thing.
Hickson, if I thought for a second she'd actually go through with it, I would have said something,
Donna assured him quickly.
And then when she did, I thought, I know it wasn't my place, but I thought you were better off without her.
It wasn't your place. He watched her, watching him carefully. It wasn't your place to be in the position to tell me, he explained. It was hers.
I saw Lou was in here. Was it her that said something?
She asked, beginning to look ticked. He shook his head. This dies right now. Her eyes grew sharp.
No, you're seeing Greta. That going okay?
It's over. She swung back a bit and murmured.
Right.
This dies here, Donna. Lou coming in here, what happened with Greta, Hope's bullshit, it's just done. Life is now just what it was before, except now I know well and truly I'm good being shot of Hope. Greta's the Greta you know. Lou is just a good friend and she'll calm down. We put who killed Nat Holloway behind bars, it'll all just go back to normal.
Okay, Hicks,
she agreed dubiously. I'm not pissed you told me, he assured her. I'm not pissed you kept it from me. I'm not anything but maybe a little troubled how easy it is to get over the woman I spent nearly half my life with.
Yeah,
she said quietly. That's it.
Okay, Hickson.
Beers would not be unwelcome tonight. Though, you can get away from the ball and chain. She gave him a smile.
I'll call Herb and ask Larry to take call. Then I'll call Toast and Tommy, and one of us will pick you up so you can get slaughtered.
That wasn't going to happen. But he'd be glad to have as much as he wanted and not have to worry about taking call or driving. Thanks, Donna. Her eyes got sympathetic.
I'm sorry, Hicks.
That's the troubling thing, he returned. I no longer am.
Healthy,
she murmured.
Healing.
Yeah.
Good.
He nodded. She shot him an uncertain grin. gave him a long look over. Then she walked out. He watched her go and wondered if, through salon gossip, Greta knew about the ring. After that, he wondered why that would be the first thing he wondered. You'll see, last night you made the biggest fucking mistake in your goddamned life. He forced his mind to tawny dare, and he wanted to doubt the truth of Lou's words. But damn it, since he threw back the first half of his beer after he got back to his apartment, that being after laying into Greta, he'd felt that doubt start nagging. It didn't matter. He had a killer to find, and the woman he'd been seeing had direct ties to the only known criminal in the county. So yeah, it didn't matter. The hell of it was he could tell himself that. But that drag in his gut wouldn't stop nagging.
Boss.
Hicks looked up from his computer with the picture of the sketch the artist had drawn of a man who looked like a lot of men, but with a goodly number of lines on his face and long hair. It wasn't much. Then again, a convenience store clerk in a large-ish town saw his fair share of people, so it was better than nothing, which meant it was something. And now Hal was at his door.
Yeah? Gemini Jones here to see you.
God damn it, Greta.
He says he might have something on the Calloway case,
Hal continued. Surprised, Hicks looked to the windows, saw Jones standing by Hal's desk. Then he looked back to Hal.
Would you bring him back?
Sure thing, Hal said, disappeared from his door, and Hicks closed the email on his computer, minimized everything he had opened, got up, and had just flipped the whiteboard when Hal brought Gemini in.
Thanks, Hal, he said, and went to Gemini, hand out.
Gemini?
Hicks? Or do I call you Sheriff now?
He asked, on an upturn of his lips and a firm shake of Hicks's hand. Hicks is good. The man was in trousers and a dress shirt, no tie, but looking dapper, which was his way, even out of the dewdrop and in rural Nebraska. They let go, but Hicks kept his hand up and motioned to the chairs. Have a seat? Gemini moved to a chair. Hicks moved behind his desk. He sat. Gemini was already folded in.
You want some coffee?
Hicks offered.
Or you want to just share why you're here? I know we're both busy, so let's just get to it, yes?
Hicks nodded. Gemini got to it.
I know a young woman who had cause to drive through Grant County Monday evening on the way to see her mama in McCook.
Hicks felt his neck grow tight. Gemini kept talking.
Now, you see, her mama read the guide's website when words started getting out and mentioned that she read around her daughter. Her daughter then mentioned something to her mama, and they immediately realized their moral dilemma.
Gemini, please, just give it to me straight, Hicks requested, speaking evenly and trying to hold on to his patience.
All right, Hicks. You see, the dilemma is, this girl, she's out on parole, and that parole is contingent on a variety of things, including her not leaving her local area, which happens to be in Kansas. So if she comes forward sharing what she saw, she might do damage to all that good behavior she showed. And since she's trying to find her way to a righteous path, that would be a shame.
If she witnessed Nathan Calloway having his life ended in a violent way and she is sitting on that, Hicks started. Gemini shook his head.
No. But she did see a man in a white truck pull over for a man who was walking along 56. She says that man didn't look all that good. Drifter, vagabond. She'd had that truck trailing her for several miles after it had pulled out from a ranch behind her. The man on the road saw the oncoming cars, lifted his arm to flag them down. She drove by. She saw in her rear view, the truck slowed and stopped.
Christ, they had a witness. She needs to make a statement and she needs to look at a sketch.
Hicks, I'll personally talk to her parole officer if you can assure me she's here only to see her mother. Her mama's got diabetes. Had a spell. She's okay now, but it's been a while since they've seen each other, and she felt it worth the risk to make a visit. So yes, Hicks, I can assure you she's here to see her mother.
He lifted both hands and dropped them.
She's a good kid. She makes stupid decisions and spends time with people who aren't worthy of it.
but she's trying to get smart about that, and she's had a hell of a lesson to teach her that's the way to go. She does right, comes forward, it bites her in the ass. This could be a catalyst for very bad things. I'll print out the sketch we have, give it to you. If it looks like who she saw flagged Calloway down, please just confirm that to me. But if she's willing to come in and make a statement, I'll do everything in my power to see she doesn't get hooked back into the system. I'll even drive down there and talk to her parole officer myself. And if she can improve on this sketch, I'll buy your mother flowers. Gemini smiled. I'll take the sketch. Hicks turned to his computer and set it to printing. As it did that, he looked back to Gemini. She said Calloway pulled over. Was it, in her estimation, a good Samaritan type of thing? Gemini nodded. This man on the road, was he alone? Hicks pressed. Gemini nodded again. Alone. Tall, brawny, dirty clothes. Haggard, sunburned, leathery. Carrying a canvas duffel on his back. She says she wouldn't have pulled over, but she also says, at the time she passed them, she thought God was good, making men like the man in that truck who had the kindness to do it. At his words, Hicks couldn't stop himself from lifting his arms, putting his elbows to the edge of his desk, linking his fingers and resting his forehead to them. Such was the weight of that statement not coming true. I know, Gemini said quietly. Test your faith, shit like this. Putting that young man there, putting my girl in a bad position. How an act of kindness that leads to an act of what might be desperation or even insanity could tear like a tidal wave through so many lives. Hicks lifted his forehead, put his chin to his hands, and gave him an understatement. Yeah. He sat back and rested his arms to the arms of his chair. She give you more? Gemini shook his head, but said, just what he was wearing. Jeans, beat-up canvas jacket, even though it was hot outside. Long brown hair. And they had their suspect. They just had to find the fucker. He turned to the printer on the credenza behind him, nabbed the sketch, and got up, walking it around the desk to where Gemini had also left his seat and was standing. He handed him the sketch. I hope she does the right thing, and I'll again give you my promise. I'll do right by her if she does. Charity's a good kid. She'll do right, Gemini replied, dropping a name and doing it on purpose. She'd be coming in. Hicks wanted to howl with relief. If she doesn't, Gemini kept on, she'll have to break more laws getting away from her mama who'll tan her ass. And that was the rest. Her mother had already solved this dilemma. Charity had always been coming in. Gemini had just showed first to broker the deal to make it safe for her to do it. Hicks gave him a small grin. This time, the way Gemini did it and why, not bothered in the slightest he'd been played. Gemini lifted the sketch. I'll be in touch. Hicks tagged a card from the holder on the outer edge of his desk and gave it to Gemini. My card. Call direct. Gemini lifted the card too, smiled, and walked out. He'd barely touched the front door to push outside before Hal and Donna were in his office.
What was that?
Donna asked. Possible eyewitness who saw Calloway pull over for a drifter with long brown hair.
Fuck yes!
Hal hissed enthusiastically.
The sketch sucks, but the minute Larry comes back with it and scans it so we got a decent copy of it, I want it out on the wire.
We might be able to sharpen up some of the rough edges soon. This witness comes forward. Pray for that, Hicks told them.
We'll be all over that,
Donna returned. Need you two on the line with homeless shelters in Omaha, Lincoln, bigger cities. I'll email the description. We have hair, face, now clothes. And he was carrying a big duffel. Convenience store guy said our guy could be anywhere between 40 and 60. I get now why he gave that range, seeing as Gemini's witness says he was leathery, haggard. Want to know if any shelters have any regulars who went walkabout and haven't been seen in a while.
All over that too,
Hal stated and walked out.
We gonna get him?
Donna asked. He's had days to get away and the wheels to do it, and only got a couple hundred miles. Convenience clerk says he's twitchy. Witness says he was a man she wouldn't stop for, but at the time she saw Calloway do it, she was glad God made a man who would. Even so,
Somehow, the man had a gun and the cognizance to wipe down that truck. Regardless, I figure we got someone who's not firing on all cylinders. In a way, it's more than he'd put two bullets in a man. That could work in our favor. That could screw us totally. She nodded.
I'll get on those shelters.
Hicks nodded back, rounded his desk, and got instantly pissed. And he did that because his first thought was that they were closing in on him. So Hicks was in a much better place than he was yesterday, or the day before, and definitely the day before that. And he couldn't share it with Greta.
You know how they're going to play this, Bryce.
It was late afternoon, and he had Bryce McCall and his two parents in his office. Bryce in one chair, his mother in the other, his dad standing behind his son's chair. They'd brought him in.
It was stupid, I know,
the 14-year-old mumbled.
Mom and Dad already laid into me.
I'm sure they did, Hicks said. And most folk would listen to reason. The Mortimers won't.
Bryce ducked his head, scooted a foot on the floor, and muttered under his breath.
She shot my dog.
She did. Bryce lifted his gaze to Hicks's. Hicks held it and carried on.
So, in light of the fact that I think this town has been reminded in an ugly way about what's important, if you write a letter apologizing to them, I'll take it out to them and then share I won't be taking this further. If you apologize, I'm satisfied you saw the error of your ways and feel remorse. This is not to say I condone what you did or vandalism in any form, Bryce, he warned.
Waited for the kid's nod, then kept going. However, considering the extremity of the extenuating circumstances, although your response was not right or even justified, it was understandable.
Yeah,
the kid whispered.
And I'm, like, totally grounded, so I'm already kinda in jail.
Hicks bit back a smile and continued.
They can, of course, push it. That's their prerogative. But they'll have to do it in civil court. I won't be pushing anything. If they have an issue with that, they can vote for my opponent in the next election.
Bryce grinned.
Too bad I won't be old enough to vote then.
Yeah, kid, too bad, Hicks murmured.
The door opened, and Larry swung his upper body in, hand on the handle.
Sorry, Sheriff. Folks, wouldn't interrupt, but gotta say.
His gaze leveled on Hicks.
Kavanaugh Becker is here to see you.
Hicks turned his head to look out the window, and he saw Becker and one of his goons studying the mural of the sheriff's shield painted over a depiction of Nebraska pastureland at the side of reception.
Hicks felt his lips thin, and he lifted his chin to Larry.
Thanks, Larry. Not a problem.
Larry's gaze went through the room.
He murmured, again, sorry,
and backed out of the door, closing it behind him.
I think we're done anyway,
Hicks said, rising and moving around his desk. He shook Bryce's hand. He had to hold firm and lock arms to share he couldn't accept the hug his beaming mother seemed intent on giving him when he took hers. And he felt his shoulder nearly get dislocated when Bryce's father pumped his arm, then knew he'd have a bruise after the man clapped him on the back. He walked them to the door. Then he looked through the windows and gave Larry the high sign. He was only 5 feet in and facing the door, arms crossed on his chest, when Becker came through.
You don't have to close the door, Larry. He's not staying long, he said to his deputy.
Right, boss,
Larry replied and disappeared.
You have 1 minute, Hicks told Becker,
who'd stopped only a few steps in, because that was as far as he could get or was welcome.
It would seem, perhaps, things didn't go as I'd intended during your visit yesterday.
When he stopped talking, Hicks prompted, You have 50 seconds.
Drake,
Becker bit off.
45 seconds.
It was just a joke, Becker shared. Tawny and her daughter play it that way. Getting one up on each other. She wasn't actually threatening you. But she does worry about her daughter. Apparently Greta's last man ended things with her in a way Tawny didn't like. It might not be the usual way a mother would deal with her daughter finding another man and sharing her concerns with that new man that she was keeping her eye on shit. But Tawny's not your usual woman.
Hicks felt something unpleasant slither through his gut. At learning Greta's last man ended things in a way a woman like Tawny Dare wouldn't like.
but he wasn't going to discuss that with Kavanaugh Becker.
Greta and her mother close? Hicks asked.
Their mother and daughter. That's not really an answer, Hicks pointed out.
You met Greta?
Becker stared him in the eyes.
No. Seen her. Got the best of her mama.
You probably get me. If she gave more talent than just looks to her girl.
Learned a long time ago. You can tag the pretty young ones. But you also got to expend the effort to train them. Seeing as they got no earthly clue how to use their mouths.
Hicks's stomach turned.
Okay, we're done. Hicks declared, moving toward him to show him out.
Drake, you don't want this deal we got to fall apart, Becker warned.
And there was the reason for the visit. Hicks stopped and asked.
I don't?
Don't be stupid, Becker snapped. Not me who hauled the sheriff's ass all the way out to his place just to play a joke. I'm investigating a murder, Kavanaugh, but even if I wasn't, I would hope you'd treat my time as more valuable than that.
Becker tried a winning smile.
You know how it is. First blush of finding a woman who gives a really great blowjob.
Now he was going to vomit.
Now we're done, he stated,
and moved to stand by his door and hold his arm out of it. Becker moved to stand in front of him.
It would be a shame. Something like this messed with a good thing.
Far as I can see, the only one who's got it good is you, Hicks remarked, dropping his arm.
Now, I obviously wouldn't know anything about it, but I do live in this county, and I'm very aware of the incredible job you do keeping illegal substances at a minimum. Probably wouldn't buy you good returns in the next election. Such things flooded our towns.
Nope, probably wouldn't.
Then again, I sent people who pushed them to the Nebraska State Penitentiary. That might make me real popular.
They had a preposterous staring contest that Becker lost, stating,
It appears we're at a stalemate.
Nope again, because if you don't get your ass out of my station, it'll be in a cell.
Told you twice, we're done. Now I'll make it clear. We're done. You remain, you're trespassing. And, well, not sure how much of a crime that is. Might have to look a few up more to see how long I can detain you. But I wouldn't mind having you as a guest if I get to see you in our accommodation.
Don't be a fool, Becker hissed.
Not me standing there when the sheriff asked me to get the fuck out.
Becker glared at him, then moved only to be yet another person to stop in his door and have something else to say.
One last thing. You should talk to Greta. Tawny's beside herself. Appears Greta didn't think the joke was funny either and cut her mama out. She was a mite hysterical when she was relating things to me, but it would seem she's made some other bad choices in regards to her daughter in the past, and this was the last straw for Greta. Tawny doesn't have much family. She needs her girl. He assumed an expression of contrition.
She can be a wild one, and she got a wild hair. It wasn't the right thing to do, Hickson, and she sees that now. If she didn't think it'd make things worse between her and Greta, she'd be here herself. But asking you, man of a dare woman to a man of a dare woman, Greta's the only kid Tawny's got, and Tawny's Greta's only mama. We fucked up. Don't let Greta take that too far, and just saying, Hickson, don't let Greta take that too far. For her and her mama, and shaken up the way other things should be.
Hickson had no reply, and Becker didn't wait for one. He took off.
Appears Greta didn't think the joke was funny either and cut her mama out.